Week 31, Overview. First Battles for Independence. This week starts off with a bang, the shot heard round the world. We'll cover the first year and a half of the Revolutionary War. Our time frame is from April of 1775 to January of 1777. The tensions that were building for 10 long years boiled over into armed confrontation. People on both sides of the conflict paid the ultimate price for what they believed. We can divide this week's material in half, the time before the Declaration of Independence and the time after. From April 1775 until July 4, 1776, Britain focused on one trouble spot, Massachusetts. King George's ministers could hardly imagine the other colonies would take Boston's side against the British Empire. Imagine their surprise when all 13 colonies joined in a unanimous Declaration of Independence. Last week, we learned about the Intolerable Acts, which Britain used to crush the resistance in Massachusetts. 12 colonies had sent delegates to New York City in late 1774 to discuss how America should respond. They were surprisingly united in their opposition to the mother country. Why were so many colonists so upset? They viewed themselves as British subjects, loyal to the crown, but not without their rights under the common law. Centuries of English precedents had drawn lines that not even a king could cross. King George III didn't see it that way. He saw the colonists as stingy, stubborn, and rebellious. Britain had huge debts to pay, but the colonists balked at the tiniest taxes. George underestimated how jealous the colonists were for their liberties. Jealousy isn't a word we tend to use in a positive sense anymore, but it's the right word in this case. Jealousy isn't necessarily bad. God is a jealous God who will not give his glory to another. Jealousy, in the biblical sense, means vigilantly protecting what is uniquely yours. Many colonists were vigilant in just that way. In February 1775, Parliament declared that Massachusetts was in open rebellion. That made it lawful for British troops to shoot troublemakers on sight. This sent shockwaves to the rest of the colonies. In Virginia, on March 23, 1775, a young lawyer named Patrick Henry rose to address the House of Burgesses. He urged Virginia to take up arms against the gathering British forces. Government students will be discussing his famous "Give me liberty or give me death" speech this week. The British government ordered General Gage to attack the Massachusetts militia and arrest leaders like Samuel Adams and John Hancock for treason. But the Patriots got his orders before he did. Adams and Hancock fled the city. Gage decided to go after the arms and ammunition the Americans had stored in the little town of Concord, northwest of Boston. "Listen, my children, and you shall hear of the midnight ride of Paul Revere on the 18th of April in 75. Hardly a man is now alive who remembers that famous day and year." Paul Revere was one of three men who rode through the night to say the British were coming. About 70 Minutemen met the Redcoats on their way to Concord at the little town of Lexington. 8 Minutemen were killed and 10 were wounded. Only one British soldier was hit. Nobody knows which side fired the first shot, but it's been called the shot heard round the world. It marked the beginning of a new era in world history. The British pressed on to Concord, where more Minutemen met them at North Bridge. 3 Redcoats were killed there and 2 more Minutemen. The British turned back, heading for Boston. On the way back, the colonists shot at them Indian style from behind trees and stone fences. The Redcoats, in their European formations, were sitting ducks for these guerrilla tactics. By the end of the day, 250 Redcoats were dead or wounded, compared to only 90 colonial casualties. The Second Continental Congress came together in Philadelphia to debate how the colonies should respond to these hostilities. On July 6, 1775, they passed the Declaration of the Causes and Necessity of Taking Up Arms. They also created the Continental Army, but they needed someone to lead it. As we learned last week, George Washington had risen to colonel in the French and Indian War before Britain changed its policies to prohibit any colonial from rising above the rank of captain. Washington had angrily denounced his commission rather than be demoted, although he went on to serve as an unpaid volunteer. Now he was promoted to general of the Continental Army. Although they believed it was necessary to take up arms, most colonists didn't want war. The First Continental Congress sent one last petition to King George in July 1775. In the Olive Branch petition, they declared their loyalty to the king and asked him to address their complaints. Meanwhile, the British were busy. They wanted to put artillery around Boston, but the Americans had already started digging in at Breed's Hill, just north of the city. They originally planned to fortify Bunker Hill, but Breed's Hill was closer. On June 17th, General Howe led British troops against their position there. The colonists had so little ammunition that their commander told them not to fire until the enemy was so close you could see the whites of their eyes. The Patriots drove back one British charge, and then another, and then they ran out of ammunition. The next British wave crashed over Breed's Hill, and the Americans had to flee. The battle, usually known as the Battle of Bunker Hill, was the single bloodiest battle of the entire war. When General Washington heard what a courageous stand the colonists had made at Bunker Hill, he said, "Then the liberties of our country are safe." The British took Breed's Hill at the cost of 1,000 casualties. 400 Americans were killed or wounded. More colonists were coming to join the fight every day while the rest of the British army was an ocean away. On July 3rd, Washington rode to Boston to take command of the Continental Forces. They needed it. The militia were poorly trained and completely undisciplined. They had few weapons and other supplies. The camps were disorganized and filthy. Washington set to work. He issued a flood of orders and fired the officers who couldn't, or wouldn't, carry them out. Soldiers learned the meaning of discipline: obey or be punished. Washington knew he needed artillery to really take on the British forces. Fortunately, the Americans had some guns. Colonels Ethan Allen and Benedict Arnold had led Vermont's Green Mountain Boys to take Fort Ticonderoga without a shot from a sleepy British garrison on Lake Champlain in upstate New York. There were cannons there and a huge stockpile of gunpowder. The British soldiers didn't even know the war had started. Washington's chief of artillery suggested they move the guns by sled across Vermont's snow-covered mountains. By late January, Washington had his guns. By early March, those guns were mounted on Dorchester Heights, south of Boston. The British were in trouble. General Howe knew his forces could not hold Boston against artillery. He decided to evacuate. On March 17, 1777, Howe's troops retreated to Canada. New England wasn't the only place where there was fighting, however. In the South, American forces won several battles before the Declaration of Independence. In November 1775, Virginia's royal governor, Lord Dunmore, offered to free any slaves who would fight for Britain. More than 1,000 rose to join him. The white colonists fought against this mixed force of black and British soldiers and drove Dunmore out of Virginia by December. North Carolina's governor urged all the royalists in his colony to join him on the side of Britain. More than 1,500 colonists joined Governor Martin and marched to the coast to meet up with new British troops arriving by sea from Boston. They were met by American revolutionaries at Moores Creek Bridge, near Wilmington, North Carolina. The Royalists lost that battle on February 27, 1776. British warships moved on to Charleston, South Carolina, where they opened fire on a fort outside the city. American forces returned fire, damaging the ships, which pulled back. The Continental Congress was afraid that British forces might attack the colonies from the north, so they ordered an invasion of Canada. Benedict Arnold led one force against Quebec, while Richard Montgomery successfully took Montreal. He moved on to help Arnold with Quebec. Their combined forces attacked the city during a blizzard on the last day of 1775. The attack failed. Montgomery was killed and Arnold wounded. The American survivors limped back to New York. With shots being fired from Charleston to Quebec, the last chance for peace with Britain had passed. On June 7, 1776, Richard Henry Lee of Virginia introduced a resolution to the Second Continental Congress stating that these united colonies are, and of right ought to be, free and independent states. After days of debate, Congress appointed a committee to come up with a Declaration of Independence. It wasn't an easy matter. Congress's earlier resolutions had made much of the privileges and immunities of English law. King George had violated a distinctly English agreement that had been part of the British Constitution since the Middle Ages. But one could hardly cite those precedents to break with England altogether. A declaration of independence from Britain needed a whole different foundation. The committee put Thomas Jefferson in charge of drafting the declaration. He turned to natural law to make the case for independence. When, in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. On July 2, 1776, Congress adopted Lee's resolution and then debated the declaration. They made a number of changes to Jefferson's draft. On July 4th, they voted to accept it. As President of the Congress, John Hancock signed it there and then, large enough, he is said to have said, for the King of England to read it without his spectacles. Then he told Benjamin Franklin, "Now we must all hang together." Yes, replied Franklin, we must all hang together, or we shall most assuredly all hang separately. America was united now, but so was Britain. By July, 45,000 British soldiers landed on Long Island, where they faced 20,000 raw American recruits. On August 27th, Redcoats crushed the Continental Army at Long Island, but General Howe was a slow mover, and Washington escaped with most of his men. Howe took New York City in November. Things looked bad for Washington. His discouraged forces retreated to New Jersey, then fled before British forces to Pennsylvania. Less than 5,000 men were fit to fight, and two-thirds of those were short-term recruits who would leave at the end of the year. Congress abandoned Philadelphia as the British advanced. On December 25th, however, Washington regrouped. In a surprise move, he led 2,400 men across the Delaware River in a fleet of small boats. The next morning, they struck the German mercenaries at Trenton and took 900 prisoners. A week later, America won a major victory at Princeton, New Jersey. As winter set in, Washington moved his men to Morristown, New Jersey. The Continental Army had survived their first battles with Britain. Now they had to make it through the winter. America was united in its opposition to Britain, but the war was off to a rocky start. The British expected they would easily crush these American upstarts as soon as spring came. As pamphleteer Thomas Paine wrote, "These are the times that try men's souls." The United States were put to the test, but we'll have to wait until next week to see how they passed it.